around it, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Glad to have you along for the next hour. We get into all kinds of stuff. We'll have our man Jim Traber coming up at 9:30. I'll bet you he wants to mention Nebraska. Yeah, 1240's not working. That's the second text I've got on that.
The storm's doing something. We're
not sure how to fix that, but just bear with us. Use the app or 98.1 FM. Of course, I couldn't get that this morning at Sayre either, so. Anyhow, but everybody knows what happened last night with the storms. The app is working, isn't it?
The computer that runs the app was down. It's booting up right now.
Okay.
So I don't know if anyone's listening to us right now.
Well, I guess we can say whatever we want for the next 20 minutes before everything gets shot back on. I'm sure Jim will want to talk about Nebraska and the debacle that is Scott Frost and the Cornhuskers. I've got some horrible numbers if you're a Nebraska fan we can talk about. What's going on? Which conference has the most to gain or lose this week on the college football gridiron? Week one starts Thursday all the way through next Monday. Labor Day Monday has Georgia Tech and Clemson. So which conference has the most to lose? Also, week zero high school football. We'll start out the show with that. Kind of recap what happened all across not only the couple of districts out here, but then across the state. As well, that's what we got planned. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to kadsam.com or download the Paragon app. The app has it all. It's got three radio stations. It's got the Penny News. It's got Big Elk TV and Paragon TV, which will be in full effect coming up on Friday night with three different games. Also, the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you go back and check that out. iTunes or KADSAM.com. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
Oh, just wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You got that crazed look in your eye.
Oh, I'm just trying to get us online, but I'm good. It's Monday.
It is Monday.
Monday. You have a good weekend?
Yeah. I went out and enjoyed the Diamond in the Rough golf tournament.
How'd that go?
Well, if you live at 120 Killian Lane in Sayre, it went very well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it did.
Do tell.
Well, it's been a really cool way to raise some money.
Yes.
For the golf teams. What'll happen is Barbara Dyson has a they'll set on a hole, normally it's number 15, the par 5 behind the green. And they'll buy an ice chest. And what you do is you buy chances for the ice chest, and if you win, you get half the money that goes in.
Oh, very good.
And it's a big old nice Yeti ice chest. This one was more personalized for the women. So it's like leopard print with pink wheels. I mean, it's pretty cool. And as we're sitting there after the tournament's over, the drawing and the name that comes out is my wife's
name.
So a pretty good chunk of change.
Yeah.
And a brand new ice chest.
Well, what's she going to buy you?
Doesn't look like anything. Hopefully, I'm hoping, and I'm already starting to kind of trying to wheel and deal for maybe a new TV when we get moved.
Just in time for the football season.
Yeah,
I like it.
That's what I'm thinking, a new TV.
I like that plan. That's for everybody, not just for you.
That's right.
It's a family purchase.
Yes. Hopefully she'll agree with you there. But yeah, that's so that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
It's not something that, I never win anything in drawing, so looks like my wife is the lucky one.
My, you know what? That's funny you say that, because my wife, same way. I don't ever win anything. And she wins the drawing type stuff, especially at her company Christmas parties.
Yeah.
It's always her coming home with, like, well, I got this. Like, it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how?
Yeah.
It's amazing. One year, we were at the Christmas party, and they're letting the kids do the drawing. And the kids were lined up taking turns doing the drawing.
Uh-huh.
And then my kid goes up there, Katie, goes up there to do the drawing for the next prize. She reaches in, pulls out, Aliatha.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that might have been rigged. we hadn't, it was funny.
Great point on the text line. My wife is lucky. She won the biggest drawing that she could have ever won.
Oh.
Me.
You.
Yep. So that was cool. Yesterday we kind of we had to leave the house because someone was going to come to look at it.
I see.
And I don't know if that ever happened or not, but anyhow, so we just kind of buzzed around, made a little Walmart list, went in, and that's kind of what we did. What did you do?
Let's see. Well, of course, Friday night we had fun. We'll talk about that. Saturday I worked around the house until 11:30, and then watched the game in Dublin, Ireland. We'll talk about that. Which I thought was going to be a dud, and then it turned in kind of fun, and then funny. And my littlest one had a friend over to stay the night, so we played around outside and ordered pizza. Yesterday is turned into practice day, so for both 8U and 10U, so we did that. It was really hotter than usual.
Man, it was
I
hot
yesterday, and I think because that rain came in, it made it kind of humid and sticky too. But yeah, so that was it. I mean, nothing major, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, it was hot yesterday afternoon.
It was, and we got in that batting barn. Oh, I cannot get the air flowing in that thing. But the 10U practice outside, and we start that at 6:30. So by then sun was kind of getting, and then some clouds were coming in, you know, mm-hmm. and I think it led to those storms last night. So it kind of really, really helped. And, you know, there's enough breeze to cool you off. So, but yeah, it was hot yesterday. I thought about mowing, and then I stepped on, you know.
That's kind of what I did.
I'll give another couple days to grow.
Looks like from the rain gauge I saw at the Sayre Golf Course, it had 3.25 in it, which is across the street from our house. So we got to be somewhere in that range.
We had rain on Saturday.
I'm going to say that was last night.
Oh, just from last night? We maybe got a trace over there my way.
Ours was 5. We had over 5, but that dates back to last Sunday as well.
Yeah. So hey, I'll take it.
About five and a quarter.
Mother Nature, if you want to rain overnight every night, that's cool with me.
It'd be the perfect time,
yeah.
Wouldn't it? High school football got underway this week, and that meant right here in Elk City. The Elk City Elks hosted the Altus Bulldogs. From what I can find, history of the series, which I know we have one really good source to go back and find those head-to-head matchups,
mm-hmm.
that was the first time Elk City had ever beaten Altus in high school football. They'd only played 7 times, which seems like not a bunch for two schools that close, but I don't remember those two teams playing very often at all, and so maybe that's accurate. But Elk City wins 36-7. Got a little bit of hairy there at the beginning of the third quarter. The Elks came out and threw an interception, got a stop on defense, and then I think the very next play on first down, ball was knocked loose in the backfield. Altus picked it up for a 20-yard scoop and score touchdown, made it 14-7 Elks. But from there, the offensive line really established the line of scrimmage. Levy Owens on that next drive to put the Elks up 22-7, had a couple of longer gains, helped by a penalty on one of those where the safety for Altus, Kellison, had to jump on his back and basically just drag him down by the face mask because he was out in the open field with all kinds of momentum. So I thought it was good to see them, you know, when the adversity hit. It's probably when they played their best football from then on. Defensively, Elk City was great all night. Altus ended up with just over 100 yards total offense. Two plays accounted for like 65 of the 101. So for the most part, all night long, the Elks were really, really good defensively. Offense still probably a little bit of a work in progress, trying to gel with the different aspects of what they're doing. But overall, for the first game, I thought the Elks were pretty good on Friday night.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and overreact how good they are. Isn't that usually how it works after game one? My initial thought was, one, that game kind of had everything that you wanted for a first game with a lot of new pieces put in place. The adversity stands out. How would they respond? And they responded tremendously, in my opinion. Two, last year the offense is what really made this team work. The defense was good. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. This year I think that they could probably lean on the defense at times. If the offense is still trying to find a rhythm, then that defense is still good enough to keep them right there. I thought that was the most, you know, the defense often gets overlooked in at any level, you know, because the offense scores points, more points win the game. But the defense, I thought was really good, and I could see them, you know, if they can get better and better, which is always the goal, week in, week out, get better than last week, that could be a very, very good defense this year for the Brown and White.
Yeah, the one thing you wonder about that you probably didn't get to see, at least defensively, is how they'll hold up against somebody that can throw it. Altus didn't even really try.
I don't think they
the one time they tried to throw a pass, they got I think it was Blake Redd, hit the quarterback right as his arm was going forward, and it was an incompletion. I don't remember there being another one. Maybe there was, but God, it's harder. So the point
kept
being,
kept waiting for it on third down, like, where's it coming? And they'd still run it.
Point being, there's still a question mark, at least a little bit out over from what we saw in the El Reno scrimmage on a couple of plays down the field that the Elks didn't defend as well is probably what you'd hope. There's still that lingering out there for a team that can throw it, but overall, a good start. Merritt went to Hinton, and the comments proved why they are a preseason top 10. As they got out on Merritt early and often, end up winning 46-6. Good news for the Oilers, though, is they return home for their home opener this week against Cordell. That should be a game that they'll have a great chance to win, as Cordell got blown out over in Sayre 49-6. 4A1-wise, in Elk City's district, you had Clinton defeat Kingfisher 21-6. They fell behind early, 6-0, and then shut Kingfisher out the rest of the way. Tuttle beat Cash 39-14. John Marshall lost a lot in Mac 43-18, but then Chickasha did get a win 20-14 over El Reno. So what are your thoughts the rest of the district wide for 4A1?
Maybe as expected, Chickasha kind of stood out to me. El Reno can be salty at times. I've seen them have good years and bad years. They're still 5A in a big school. And Chickasha, we've always heard about or known about their athletes. So you just kind of wonder what year they're going to put it all together with those athletes. So keep an eye on them. So, again, kind of all as expected. You know, Clinton with a lot of turnover there. Wasn't surprised. I went back and watched a little bit of that one. Wasn't surprised. A little bit of a slow start. But, you know, cream usually rises to the top, especially at the Tornado Bowl. And then Tuttle, they're kind of slow starting it, too. I think that was – they didn't start scoring till late in the second quarter. And then they ran away. So, again, everything kind of as expected for me.
This week in 4A1, the Elks will play Bridge Creek. Bridge Creek won their season opener against Lexington 32-0. Chickasha gets Marlow. Clinton steps up in class against McGinnis as they travel to McGinnis. Cash will play the Altus Bulldogs, John Marshall and Bethany. And then the two teams that didn't play week zero are out there in week one. Weatherford goes to Kingfisher, Woodward at Guthrie. In District A1, you got Sayre hosting Walters. Burns Flatdale City will play their first game of the season. They'll travel down to Carnegie. I mentioned Merritt Cordell. Thomas will go to Alva. Moreland at Minco. Hooker plays Wheeler, Texas. And then Fairview is at Chisholm. Not a ton of wins in A1 in the first week. Sayre got a win and Fairview, but everybody else fell in week one. So we'll see if they can bounce back in that district. Around the state, one thing of note that we noticed on Friday night, a future opponent for the Elks, Carl Albert, was beaten by Coweta 44-14 after kind of doing some digging on that game. A big reason why, Reed DeQuasi, the quarterback, broke his collarbone in the first half.
Oh, boy.
So that's a huge reason why
that's a bummer.
That game kind of flip the way it did. You would assume that there's no way that the Elks see him in a couple of weeks. I know it's a little blurb in the Oklahoma said he's planning on having surgery soon. So you would assume that Reed DeQuazy's for sure out for that. We'll see about the rest of the year. But that could be a big reason why Kawita was able to not only knock off Carl Albert, but really pull away and hammer him there in the second half at 44-14.
Well, that's – you don't want that. I mean, you want – I know it's a future opponent, and you want to see a future opponent at full strength. You don't want to hear about key players being out, especially like that. He's a good athlete, good player. Hate to hear that for Carl Albert.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So
here's the deal, though. Final thought on that. I've seen it where a key player on a team gets hurt in the first game. Well, it's still enough time to figure out how to move forward without him, and that team went on to win a state title. Carl Albert's very capable of doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Just give them time. They're still going to be Carl Albert.
Yeah, you'd rather have it happen week one than week 10.
Absolutely.
You know, I think back to one of those really good Heritage Hall teams that came here in week 10, and the quarterback, I think it was Blake Adams, broke his collarbone. And actually, Gage Porter broke his, too, in the same half.
Wow.
You know, and then you look up, and Heritage Hall's undefeated, and they get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs because what's behind them doesn't have a chance to really – get better and understand what's supposed to happen with the playoffs. So, yeah, if there is any sort of silver lining for them, it is, you know, week one, not only is it give somebody else a chance to get comfortable before district play starts, but also it could give him a chance to be able to be back out there in the most important games of the season later on in October and November.
Right.
Don't forget, you've got a week to get signed up. The Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Contest. It's on ESPN's website. It's also, I have a link that I'll repost on the Skinny on Sports Facebook page as well. You have till Saturday morning to get in there and get your picks made for this week. You don't want to fall behind because the points are off of total wins. So if you miss a couple of weeks, you get involved in week three, you're already giving somebody else a chance at 20 extra picks. To get right. It's not off of your percentage of right. It's off of how many you get right. So you got to get it would behoove everyone to be in from the very start. So go to ESPN's website, the Fantasy tab, click on the College Pick'em. The group is the Skinny on Sports. The group's message is people before property because that's the motto of Western Oklahoma Realty. Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and all the gang down there at Western Oklahoma Realty. Call them 225-6271 for all your real estate needs. We've got 33 signed up now. That number needs to double by the time Saturday rolls around. Speaking of college football, Jared, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Now, I sat right here in this seat 2 weeks ago Wednesday and tried to convince everybody that Nebraska just had some bad luck a year ago. And when you look at the numbers, 1-8 in Big Ten games, they averaged outgaining their opponent by 65 yards per game. It's hard to figure out how you can have that poor of a record with seemingly dominating the game as the stats would tell you that they did. And then you get to watch what happens on Saturday. Trailing 17-14 at halftime, to come out, they wrestle back the lead. They're up 11, and Scott Frost says, "You know what? It's a good time for, as we've wrestled every stitch of momentum back in this game, and look poised to just go ahead and run away from Northwestern. You know what we ought to do? Let's run a surprise onside kick that surprised nobody." And from there, Nebraska doesn't score another point, and Northwestern ends up knocking Nebraska off 31-28. That is the ninth straight one-score loss for Nebraska. That hasn't happened since Iowa State did the same thing in 2014 through 2016. Scott Frost, since 2018 when he became the head coach at Nebraska, his team is now 5-21. In one-score games. That is the worst record since 2008 in such games. Just an embarrassment if you're a Nebraska Cornhusker fan.
Are the one-score games indicators of getting out-coached or just bad luck?
See, I thought it might just be bad luck when I looked at last year. I mean, because when you look, you know, they were horrific in those games. And you'd think just the law of averages would tell you that this year they'd win at least half of them. And then you turn that, you know, saying all of a sudden you're 8-4 instead of 3-7 or what have you.
Right.
No, it's everything. It's just Nebraska's good enough to play close and not good enough to win for a multitude of reasons. Casey Thompson throwing a couple of picks, that, you know, the one there at the end, little bit behind the tight end. Tight end should tell you he should catch it. Casey will tell you he should put it on the money. But it's just a little bit off, right? And that's what happens when you can't win those close games. You're just a little bit off. And at the end of the day, it's not just a reason. It is the reason. You're just not good enough. You're just not. And whatever it comes down to, each game, I promise you, if you went back and looked, it would be something different that was just a little off. Mm-hmm. It's all the defense, and you know, Nebraska's defense gave up over 200 yards rushing on Saturday to Northwestern, which that doesn't even make sense when you say it with what those two programs have been, or historically anyhow. But they're just not good enough. At the end of the day, they just aren't. And that's why they lose those games.
Yeah, it's, if you're Nebraska, you're incredibly frustrated. And I legitimately thought they're going to leave him in Dublin, Ireland, Scott Frost. I thought that, because I think what saved his job last year was personnel moves, bringing in the offensive coordinator from Pitt, name escapes me, and then, you know, getting Casey Thompson. Well, that came afterwards. But the one-score games, like, he was like, look, we performed, look at the stats, we just came up short every time. We are almost there. We're right there. We're so close. And then it was just much of the same. But, man, the onside kick, that's where I go into the coaching thing. Like, that, what you know, that's a risk-reward type of call. If he gets it, he looks like a genius, and if they get it, then obviously they get it and they go down and score, then he looks like a genius, and then they wrap that thing up and they win it. But because of you know, they didn't get it, then all of a sudden he's the goat of this situation, and again, now his job, that seat is on fire right now. And I keep going back to the coaching thing. Like, is he getting out-coached in these situations late in games? Is he overthinking it? Is he overdoing it? I don't know. It's mind-boggling that this is happening to Nebraska. But I keep going there that, I mean, when they went to the Big Ten, it's kind of where the spiral started, maybe a little before. But it doesn't look like it's going to get any easier for him. Because according to some, they're going to lose on Saturday too.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you mentioned the offense coordinator. It's Mark Whipple that came over.
Thank you.
And Frost after the game.
And the way that game started, I thought, okay, they might have figured some stuff out. Casey Thompson looks really good. They're whipping it around the field. The Garcia Castaneda, is that his name? That might be a connection that's going to be really dangerous in the Big Ten between those two. And the defense looks solid too to start. And what was it, like 14-3 at one point or something?
It seemed like they're ahead 11 points a couple of different
times.
Yeah,
and I thought, well, okay, they're just going to, you know, Northwestern's always been respectable. I like their head coach who's been there. It blew my mind. They said, what's the 17th season there?
Fitzgerald. Yeah.
Doesn't seem that long, but he's been there a long time. And I've always liked him, and I always thought he's a smart guy. And there's, you know, and – what, got to a couple of Big Ten championship games. And
yeah, just 2 years ago.
Just 2 years ago and a couple years before that. So they're like a respectable program. But the way Nebraska started, this is good. And then the way it ended, like, well, it's Nebraska. Nebraska's going to Nebraska.
Frost after the game, quote, I think our offensive staff has to learn you've got to be a little more creative in this league. Clear shot at Whipple, who averaged 41.4 last year in charge of that Pitt offense led by Kenny Pickett. You know, Casey Thompson, he does a lot of good, but it does seem like and think back to Texas, in a lot of those games, he played well, but he had a soul-crushing turnover. You know, I think back to what difference the season is for Texas to right the ship after blowing that lead to Oklahoma. They come out, they're handing it to OSU, handing it to them. It's 14-3, about to be 21-3, and he throws a pick six, and the game is over. From you know what I mean? It just seems like that's been a bugaboo of his that has popped up. Even back to high school, think back to that game right here on Big Elk Stadium, 77-70. Obviously, he had a great game, but what was the lasting memory of that game for him?
The last play.
The last play was a pick six. And so, fair or unfair, it does seem like that Casey Thompson, even when he plays really well in a lot of these losses, he has a major hand in it. With just a horrible mistake, and he threw a couple of picks in that game the other day, and you know, really both of them probably should have been caught. But that just kind of seems the way Nebraska football is right now, right? And yeah, Frost, I wonder if Frost, because he has turned over the play calling duties to Whipple, and Whipple was having a pretty solid game, does he think to himself, now wait a minute, I need to do something here? And so then he calls for the surprise onside kick to try to look like the genius. And is he worried that if his team wins 35-20 and the offense looks as good as it had looked and he's not the one calling plays, is he thinking in his mind, oh, man, I've got to be able to at least take some of the credit for this win? I don't know. But it just seemed like such a peculiar choice at that time of the game to do that. And it was like the dagger, and we didn't know it yet. It's Nebraska scores 0 points in the fourth quarter, and Northwestern come back from 28-17 down late third to beat the Cornhuskers 31-28.
Not a buddy. The final thought about Nebraska, I know we got to get the gym, but I was texting a friend saying, hey, well, Thompson looks like he's in a better offense right now. This was the first half, and he just kept saying, just wait, just wait. And then the second half, and then the game-ending interception. He says there, and he texts me back and said, "That's the Thompson I was waiting for."
And it
seemed like new team, same results.
And he played great,
yeah, he
except
did.
For two mistakes. Yeah. And like I said, you could make the case that neither one of those were his fault.
Good,
but it always seems to top
kind of,
up,
kind of following him around.
It is, and now he's at a spot where it's following them around too. It's almost like a match made in heaven or hell,
or
maybe
hell.
maybe for Nebraska yeah. fans. Please be joined now by the voice you'll hear right here on these airwaves at 2 o'clock. It is Mr. Jim Traber. What's up, Jim?
How are you, fellas? Everything good?
Everything's good. We got a whole bunch of rain. It was loud last night. It woke everybody, at least in my house, up about 2 to 3 o'clock. But
that's great. It seems like a lot of people got rain.
Yes.
I was just sitting here and watching the TV and the crawl on the bottom on one of these shows that I should first take. It's turned off, but it talks about the Dallas Cowboys, and I just think it's pretty funny. You know, I got to ask you a question. One of the other things that was down there, it said, is this the year that Mike Tomlin is going to go under 500? Let me ask you guys a question. I'm listening to people this morning like Skip Bayless and others talk about how great Baker Mayfield looked, right? I mean, oh, my gosh, it looks unbelievable, blah, 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 blah. Did anybody watch Trubisky yesterday?
I actually did.
Did you guys watch him at all?
I watched about the whole second quarter.
Yeah, he looked great. He looked about as good as anybody in the league. Now, I know he's not as good as anybody in the league, but I just think it's funny that everybody has their own little, you know, mantra of what they want to talk, how they, whatever fits them. And I'll tell you right now, if you just were dropped from Mars and you sat down on the couch and you watched both of those quarterbacks for the Steelers yesterday, you would think, wow, man, they're really good at quarterback. See, I don't ever get fired up about a preseason game, but if you're going to get all fired up about Baker Mayfield and what he did, then you should be falling off your chair about Trubisky. He looked great. Great. And you know what? I know a lot of the players aren't going to be stepping on the field. So, you know, in reality, it's not that big of a deal what he did. But it's the same thing for Baker. It's not a big deal what he did either. I guess if you want to say, well, he's coming back from injury, I guess. But Trubisky's coming back from oblivion. So, anyway, I'll tell you this. I'm usually pretty right on my Steelers, and I think a bunch of people are wrong on them this year. I really do. I think that they're, you know, are they going to go 13-4? No, but I mean, I think they're better than the Browns, and I think they'll challenge the other two teams in that division too.
You know, I thought it was not a big game because it is the preseason, but I mean, heck, a lot of the conversation last week surrounding the Steelers was, is it even going to be Mitch Trubisky's job? Is Kenny Pickett proven to be good enough for him to get the start? Now, he was good too, but I thought maybe Trubisky, especially there, that drive to end the first half, he found Pickens a couple of times, and then in the end zone with the touchdown to Sims. I thought that was kind of almost a statement from him, and like, listen, young man, it's still my job for now.
I mean, listen, don't you have to feel good? See, for some reason, when people have the narrative of something, then they won't let it change, okay? And the narrative is the Steelers are terrible at quarterback. I mean, that's the narrative.
Right.
But Trubisky went up there to Buffalo, and he learned under Josh Allen and what's that offensive guy? What's his name?
Daboll. Brian Daboll.
Yeah, Daboll. Yeah. He goes up there and has a little year. I mean, let's face facts. It was a fiasco where he was before. I mean, the Bears and everything, they don't know what they're doing. So maybe Trubisky's better. I don't know. I'm not going to go out on some big old limb. What I'm saying is that let's see what happens when the season starts. I thought he was a good football player coming out of high college, and I swear I thought he looked pretty good with the Bears. And the Steelers, I don't know, man, they got a bunch of weapons, guys, a bunch of weapons. This Pickens kid is big time, you know, so I don't know. I'm kind of excited about the season. Look, they open up the season right off the bat at Cincinnati. And remember what happened last year. They opened the season at Buffalo, and they went up there and won. I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm just saying let's see what happens because I think they got a pretty good squad. I really do.
Do you think you'll have anybody from the same people from Nebraska calling you and texting you this week as they were last week?
Well, if they have the guts, they will, but they probably won't. I want that one guy who texted in and said, I'm a season ticket holder for Nebraska, and there is absolutely no way that Scott Frost is going to be fired, no matter what happens. Oh, really? I mean, you mean when you go to Ireland and lose to Northwestern, a team you beat by 40-something last year? So there's no way, huh? Look, he's a horrible coach. That's one of the worst onside kick situations I've ever seen. You know, I like onside kicks. I like them at different times. But you're up 11 in the first game of the year, and you have a team that doesn't. Mm-hmm. Sure, you don't take that chance right there. You just don't do it. And I guess you can say hindsight 20/20, because maybe if it worked, I'd be coming on here today and going, "What a great onside kick!" I don't know. What I do know is it didn't work. And I guess maybe the Nebraska fans can call in today and tell me that they're the best 0-1 team in the country, because if you remember, Barry Trammell and everybody told me they're the best 3-9 team they've ever seen. Well, are they now the best 0-1 team they've ever seen? They're a joke. Nebraska is an absolute joke. Scott Frost is a joke. And these Nebraska fans are living in a fantasy land. That's what it is. They live in an absolute fantasy world because it's they're not any good. Nebraska's horrible. Northwestern's not any good at all. By the way, here's another thing I thought of. Do you really want to pull an onside kick on a team that probably has the smartest players in the country?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that dude, he didn't move from his spot because you know why? Because his coach said, listen, pal, you stay here until the ball's kicked and then you drop back. And you know what he did? He did his job because these dudes are smart as can be. I'm not going to pull an onside kick on Duke and Northwestern and teams like that, Stanford. Because they're going to do what they're supposed to do, right? That's what they're. You go to those schools and become superstars, not in football, in life. And I think it's hilarious that he tried it against the smartest team on the planet.
Well, I'd seen some video where earlier kickoffs where Northwestern was cheating, and it looked like it was going to be wide open right there, like them begging them to do an onside kick. Makes me wonder if they baited them to do that. Again, it goes back to the smartness. I mean, even their coaching was smarter than them. Which leads me to my question. I asked Aaron this. Scott Frost, you know, the one score losses last year, and then again it happens to start the game this year. Is that a sign of just bad coaching or bad luck?
It's bad coaching. I mean, after a while, it's not bad luck.
I mean, if they want to say that it's bad luck, that's fine. But, I mean, that's ridiculous. It's bad coaching. Great coaches win close games. Bad coaches lose close games.
So if that's what they've got going at Nebraska, that they lost a bunch of close games, how sad is that?
Yeah.
It's like I said last week, guys, if you were listening. I went to the very first game Bob Simmons' career. Nebraska came to town. Thursday night game. They obliterated them. I mean, it scored 60-something points. Imagine, would we ever think at that point that Oklahoma State is a better, and I mean much better program than Nebraska right now? Who would ever think that that would ever happen? That's kudos to OSU, but that shows you where Nebraska is. They're an embarrassment.
Yeah, 9 straight one-score losses. That's the last time that happened was Iowa State. I got news for you. You don't want to be on a list with Iowa State in about anything in college football history because that's been a horrific program. And then 5-21 under Scott Frost at Nebraska in one-score game since he took over in 18. That's by far the worst in the FBS. So, yeah, coaching.
But listen, they could be 21-5, though. They're really close.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really close. Guys, 15-30. Who keeps their job nowadays at a supposedly big-time program when they're 15-30? I guess maybe they're waiting until that buyout changes on October 1st. Which, by the way, why would anybody do that? Can you help me? Why would you change the buyout in the middle of a season? Is that the stupidest thing you've ever heard? I don't know why that would be.
No, I don't really either.
You would think that the minute that thing happens, you get rid of it. But, hey, maybe they'll beat OU. Maybe they'll beat OU. You never know.
Yeah, I think I'd seen if he wins his next 50, he would still have a worse record at Nebraska than Bo Pelini did. And they couldn't wait to get rid of Pelini up there. It's just it's crazy how much it's fallen. I heard you guys talking a little bit about the playoff. I think it was Fat Jack on Friday. Are you a take the big three and then somebody else for the playoff, or do you think that one of Ohio State, Bama, Georgia maybe doesn't get in, and now you're looking for two others?
No, I'm putting all three of them in. I really am. I'm interested to see this new quarterback at Clemson. And I think Utah's got an outside chance. Obviously, I think OU's got a chance. But if you look at the schedule, fellas, I'll be surprised if Alabama and Georgia don't both go 12-0. They play each other 12-0, then both of them are getting in no matter what happens, right? So, yeah, I just think those three teams are just too good. And I think Alabama might have the best team they've had under Saban. And I think Ohio State's loaded. So, I would put those three teams in. I mean, if I had to go out on a limb for the fourth one, I guess I would go with Clemson. I'm not really excited about picking OU to go to the Final Four. But, those three are in, guys, in my opinion. And, like I said, Utah may have a chance. We'll see.
So you're not like Desmond Howard. Did you see his picks?
He's an idiot. He does it every time. What? Who'd he put in? Michigan and Ohio State, probably?
No, he had Michigan, Pitt.
Baylor. Utah.
And A&M.
He had A&M.
And A&M beating Pitt in the finals, I think.
Yeah, that's part of a drunken stupor is what that is.
Hey,
he does that every year, fellas. He does it every year. He's always putting in stupid people, including his alma mater.
Pac-12, you mentioned Utah. I think this is a huge, if for any, you know, every week is important. But for the Pac-12 itself, I think this is either they're in or they're out. With Utah going to Florida, obviously Oregon can make a huge statement if they were to upset Georgia down in Atlanta. And then I think a lot of people, even though it's against Rice, are going to pay attention to what USC and Lincoln Riley do in the first week. That, for to me, the Pac-12 can make a huge statement or go out with a whimper like they have the last few years in week one.
Well, they'll end, yeah, you're right, week one, but, I mean, they'll end up eventually going out with a whimper. They're going to get lit up by Georgia. Oregon's going to get lit by Georgia. Of course USC will dominate Rice. If they don't dominate Rice, then they've got some big question marks.
And then, you know, Utah, I love Utah. I was talking about them on the radio last week. I love them. I think they're a really good program. They've got a great coach. That Riesling kid looks like he is rising. I think he's really good. So it's going to be I think there's going to be the Pac-10 is going to have a great race. I really do. Or is it the Pac-12? I can't remember anymore. But, yeah, the Pac-12 is going to have a great race, I think. If
but it's going to be for like going to the Rose Bowl because they're not going to be playing. They're not going to be playing any Final Four or anything. My grandson is yelling here. Hey, settle down, big boy. You're fine.
What are your thoughts on the Big 12 race? It feels like OU, OSU, and Baylor start out ahead. See if Texas or Kansas State or maybe even Iowa State surprises after a disappointing year last year. What are your thoughts on the Big 12 race and who
would
you favor?
There's only three teams that can win it. Okay. There's only three teams that can win it. OU, OSU, and Baylor. I mean, I don't believe in Texas. If that quarterback plays great, then maybe it will be. But they've had some big injuries. I don't know if you've seen. I mean, they've had the big injuries in the preseason. So, I'm picking OU to win the league. But I can see both Baylor and OSU winning it. The deal is you just throw you both Baylor and OSU. That's why I'm picking them.
If Baylor or, you know, was the opposite, you know, where one of the others had the other two at home, then I might pick them. But I think OU. OU is so hard to figure out, guys. I mean, a brand new coaching staff, brand new quarterback. I mean, a guy has never played at this level. I know, you know, Central Florida is coming to this level, but, you know, it's different. It's different when you're playing, you know, when you're not playing Tulane and East Carolina and people like that, you know. So I think it's going to be a great season. I can't wait.
But I do think that I do think OU is going to be really fun to watch. And I think probably their first test will be at Nebraska, but sure looks like it'd be a horrible loss now.
In the Big 12, I'll go back to coming up this weekend for week one. What game stands out to you that you're keeping an eye on? Not a lot of big hitters in it, but anything stand out to you as matchups? I think OSU's game could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, OSU better crush Central Michigan. Especially with what happened to him last time. I mean, if Mike Gundy is a motivator at all, okay, then he should have this team. I mean, he should tell them that this was a loss on his record that he shouldn't have. I mean, there's a bunch of really good things that he could use. So, like I said, he better have these dudes ready to go, and they should light Central Michigan up. I don't know, man. I really don't even remember some of the games in the league this week. But
TCU at Colorado.
West Virginia Pitt is
West
the one that I like.
West Virginia Pitt looks like be a good one.
Yeah, that's right. The old. It's not. Is it called the Backyard Brawl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yep, Backyard Brawl.
That's what I thought. Yeah, no, that you're right, because Pitt's really good, and I want to see the JT Daniels kid. What time is that game?
It's Friday. It's Thursday night. Same time. It's same day as OSU. I'm almost positive.
Thanks. I don't know why they would do that.
Yeah, 6 o'clock. Yeah, they both start exactly at 6 o'clock. West Virginia at
perfect.
Pitt and Oklahoma State hosting Central Michigan.
Perfect.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great game. I'm anxious to see that. Colorado's supposed to be four, right?
I'm just interested in the new coaching staff at TCU.
No. I'm not saying it, but, you know, in name it looks like a good one, but it just looks, I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't look real good.
Is there somebody somebody around the country that you think not being talked a bunch about? Like for me, I'll tell you what it is. It's Kentucky. Watching Will Levis last year at the end of the year, then beating Penn State in the bowl game. He's coming back. He's one of those top 3, 4, 5 guys looking forward to the NFL draft at the quarterback spot. I'm interested to see Mark Stoops in Kentucky and if he can kind of take that next step to really challenge Georgia, Florida, at the top of the SEC East.
Yeah, well, I think he's doing a great job, but
if they could just be second in that league on that East side, that'd be great. You know, that'd be really good if they could just be the second best team on the East. It'd be really, really hard though to get up in that Georgia range. Georgia's loaded up, fellas.
And they lost a bunch of players, and they've still got a bunch left. That's going to be I'm kind of looking at Maryland. I think the Terrapins are better. I don't think they're going to make some big move in the Big Ten, but I'll tell you what, if they were in the ACC still, I think they could win the ACC. And Pitt is a team that I think they're not going to go to the Final Four, but I think Pitt's good. Now, they did lose this Pickett, who played quarterback for him for 4 years. So, you know, they're going to have to make sure that, that what they brought in, that Slovis kid,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Slovis, boy, you hear great things about him, but he never really does anything. You know, interesting. It'd be nice if you, they talk good about you all the time. You never do anything great, so.
Well, that's how you get NIL deals nowadays.
Yeah, you're right.
And then they
lost the Addison kid to USC. So I don't know. We'll see. I think Pitt and Maryland are two teams that I think could be better.
Yeah, we'll know about Pitt right off the bat because after West Virginia, then they host Tennessee the next week, and Tennessee's one that Jared likes to be maybe a little bit better than what a lot of people think around the country.
They're not afraid. Pitt's not afraid to schedule. You know, they're not afraid to schedule. They play some teams. Tennessee, we'll see. I mean, I'm not a big Heupel fan, but he has obviously done a whole bunch better than I thought he would. I just didn't think he had enough charisma, you know, to bring people around him. But, my gosh, he was starting quarterback for a national championship team.
Would you like to see, and I know I would, there's three guys that have been ostracized for about the last year to a year and a half that are sure looking a lot smarter than the sports media that was hammering those, and that is Aaron Rodgers, Kyrie Irving, and obviously Novak Djokovic this week not being able to come over and play the U.S. Open. But if I'm those guys, I am standing up on my soapbox, killing the people asking me questions because of the way that they were treated when, oh, by the way, they've been right this entire time.
Well, let me ask you guys, whatever happened to our society – where you just can't say you were wrong. You know, I mean, think of all the people, the teachers and the firemen and the policemen and the city workers that got fired because they wouldn't take the vaccine. Got fired. Why aren't those people out, you know, standing on national TV going, we're going to go rehire everybody we possibly can because we were dead wrong? What? Seriously, you ruin people's lives. And then when it's proven that, I mean, the thing does not do what they said it did. Matter of fact, I don't know if you've seen, guys, there's a study. I think it was somewhere over in maybe Europe or something. There's a study that says that in their case study, that people who didn't have the vaccine were better.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard, oh, well, it makes you get out of the hospital earlier. There's a study that proves different. Now, I'm not saying that's the truth. I don't know. What I do know is true is that the vaccine does not do anything that they told us it did, right? I mean, that's the truth. So what about all those people that get fired because of it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't worry so much about the professional athletes because, you're right, they did get ripped for it. And I hate sticking up for Kyrie Irving. The Djokovic thing is unbelievable. I cannot believe that the U.S. Open cannot say, all right, we were wrong, let's do this for our tournament. Why can't they do that? I mean, it's obvious these, you know, people that are making people, these kids that they're making wear masks, you know, like Washington, D.C. and New York City, the masks don't do anything. What? It's proven. Why do we keep doing this? I got to tell you something. Our world is falling apart, and it's really, really sad. Two of the reasons, one of them is because we just can't love our fellow neighbors. And I don't want to sound like some glad dude, but we just can't love other people anymore. No one can do that. And two, we can't say we're wrong. Why is it so hard, fellas, to just say, gosh, man, we were wrong? Nope, can't do it. Gonna prove you. If you say you're wrong, who knows what people are gonna say and do? It's disgusting. The U.S. Open should be embarrassed. This dude's trying to win the most majors of all time. And they're gonna, think about this, they're gonna hold him out of the tournament for a rule that is wrong. I mean, think about that. I mean, that is just mind-boggling. I'm just so disgusted with it. I mean, look, I got vaccinated. I'm really happy that I didn't get the boosters. I mean, now they're coming out with another booster. I mean, everybody run to take that. I don't know. It's unbelievable. It's not hard to just come out and say, man, all of us were wrong. We know why they're wrong. It's just political. But just come out and say it. Djokovic should be playing in the U.S. Open. No questions asked. He should be playing in the U.S. Open. We look ridiculous.
Do you think, I mean, we know politically that people don't want to say they're wrong, but have you noticed all around the world the young athletes that are healthy as anybody dropping dead. And I think Sam Hartman at Wake Forest, in my mind, it's something to do. You think that's why they're not saying they're wrong, because if they do, then they're setting themselves up to get their pants sued off when they forced people to take the vaccine that is actually harming them in ways that nobody thought were going to happen.
Well, I'm waiting for actual proof of that.
Right.
I think that you and I and people that, how should I say this? I don't know. I guess you and I and people that are a little bit further to the right, how about that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Can look at this objectively, I guess, and say, maybe none of us are objective anymore, but objectively and go, that could be true. But I want to see the proof of it. And frankly, the saddest part about this is I never thought in my whole life that the medical field would be politicized. I never thought we'd ever see that. And it all comes from that little punk Fauci. I mean, I'm sorry. If you're like Fauci out there, I apologize. But it all comes from him. You know, it has been politicized I can't believe I'd ever see that in the medical field. Because the medical field should be coming out and going, yeah, we think that the vaccine might have caused some deaths. We're going to, you know, no, they're not going to say a damn word.
Nope.
I'm sorry about the bad word,
okay.
But it just makes me so mad, man. It just drives me crazy. And, you know, French Open, yeah, come on and play. Wimbledon, yeah, come on and play. But the U.S. Open, the fine Americans, no, we're not going to let you play. I just think in Australia, I mean, they're a joke, too. So I get me fired up. You get me too fired up early in the morning. I got to drive all the way to Law today.
Hey, last thing yesterday is for the PGA Tour at least. I can't possibly think of a better outcome than the face of the tour at least during this LIV controversy with Rory McIlroy coming from behind, winning the FedEx Cup. I thought he was class act as usual. You know, almost apologizing to Scottie Scheffler. For not being able to win. But as far as the tour goes and this fight that seems like it's going to be never-ending, you can't help but think that the PGA Tour, at least, is pretty happy with what happened yesterday and the way the results came down.
It was a great day for them. There's no doubt. It looked good, really good. It was wonderful. I'm really torn on McIlroy because I like some of the things he says, but I can't get over the fact that he ripped on Trump and basically ripped on our country, you know, a couple years ago. So when you start doing that and you're being paid money while you live in our country, or at least, you know, mm-hmm. while you're in the country, that just drives me up a wall. But it was a great – the PGA Tour looked great. And the PGA Tour is literally – I mean, it's about time. You know, isn't it interesting that a lot of people don't do something until something is forced on them? You know, they thought they're cruising along, and then this live comes around, and they're going, oh, maybe we should start treating our players better, you know? This has been the best thing for everybody. It's good for the people on the LIV, and it's good for the people on the PGA Tour because they're going to get better purses and some guaranteed money. So, yeah, that was a great day. I wanted Scheffler. I was playing in that poker tournament, and I was watching the whole thing, and I was, gosh, I wanted Scheffler to win so bad. But it's great for them, and McIlroy seems like a good kid. I just wish he wouldn't have said some of that stuff.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, but – I think a lot of those guys that are staying on the tour owe Phil Mickelson a huge debt of gratitude for what he's doing. I think he has been the agent of change in a way that he probably didn't think was going to turn out this way. But at the end of the day, him doing what he's done, I think, is a huge reason why this is all happening.
Oh, I agree. But I don't like to give any credit to Phil.
I don't want to either. That's the last thing I want to do. But it's like, you know, because – let's be honest, though. Outside of Tiger, he has been the next biggest guy for this last 20-year stretch, and it matters more for him to say it versus anybody else.
Absolutely. No, you're right. This was a great thing. It was a great thing for everybody, like I said. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe the LIV will go away. I don't know. But it's a good thing because now the PGA Tour, now those players love the LIV now because they're going to get guaranteed money, and that's perfect.
Well, Jim, what you got coming up on your show today and also the podcast?
The podcast, golly. Did you guys listen to one last week about in-laws?
I have not.
Well, you need to. It's really good. I don't even remember. I I didn't get home last night till 1 o'clock in the morning from Tulsa. I barely woke up. I blew you all off last week, so I said I can't do it again. I apologize.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, I ran all the way to third last night in the tournament, so that was really good. I won money. That's the important thing.
Very, very nice. Well, I can't wait for Saturday. You try to explain to people, and if somebody's listening to us right now that hasn't heard the Sports Animals Saturday, it's the best there is. No doubt about it. I cannot wait for, gosh, what, 12 or 14 hours worth of college football coverage.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for football, and it's going to be a great football season. I'm fired up. And the Steelers, I'm telling you, they're not a Super Bowl team, but they're best. Just remember what I said. And you know me, you know what? I'll say I'm wrong, because I can admit that I'm wrong, because it's okay. Because to be a man in life, it's okay, or woman, but to be a man, it's okay to say you're wrong. That's one of the things you need. Everybody needs to teach their children. It's okay to be wrong, right? I guess that comes from my philosophy in baseball. If you fail 7 out of 10 times, you're a superstar.
Yeah.
You know, that was my life. People don't understand that. But in baseball, fail 7 times out of 10, and you're a superstar. So that's the way I grew up my whole life. So I guess maybe it's okay that I realize that we're all going to make mistakes. There's only one that walked the planet that was perfect, fellas. And believe it or not, even though some people think this, it's not me. Okay?
Well, that's a perfect mic drop to walk off for next week. Jim, have a great week.
See you, man. Bye.
All right, see you later. That's the ultimate Jim Traber. Fired up. I love it. You can tell it's game week.
Yes.
Game week for everybody. Hey, we're working. I know we're getting texts, and we do appreciate you guys texting us in to let us know that, you know, 1240 is having trouble, because without you guys telling us that, we would have no idea.
Yeah, we only know when we get in our car, obviously, but we get a direct feed into the studio, so we don't know.
Yeah.
And the stream is back.
Stream's back.
And we'll, you know,
we're working on the other.
We record all this, so we'll get it on the podcast, but we're alleviating these issues. And the big thing is that, you know, we took a lightning strike months ago, and like anything else in the world, everything is on back order, and so we're waiting for that part to come in. It's supposed to get here.
I think it was already shipped.
It's coming. So, yeah. So we're getting past this. So,
but we do get it. Listen, yes, it's the worst week ever for this to happen. It's everybody's fired up.
Yes.
About college football.
And high school football.
Yeah. And pro football right around the corner.
Exactly.
And golf.
And softball.
I don't know.
High school, come on.
Absolutely.
We're coming down the stretch in the regular season there.
Everybody have a great Monday. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.